colleague Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast! Rich Police Radio!
All right, welcome to Witch Police Radio. If you're listening to this show the day it comes out, this is coming out probably sooner than usual when I record these things, and it's for a very silly reason. The guest on this episode has coincidentally been on the show episodes that were released on the same day over a number of years leading up to this one, so we figured why not do another episode that also falls on the same day to make it sort of a very strange tradition of only talking to each other at the same time every year.
I would love to do an annual August something or other episode for the forever. That would be hilarious.
It would be really funny. It would be really funny. And I guess the good thing is that, like, we actually have things to talk about too. It's not just, it fits the ridiculous annual date thing, but it also, there's a real reason we're doing this. So I think the best way to start this off is if you want to introduce yourself, give a bit of background about who you are and what you do, and we can take it from there.
Sure. I'm Paul Hodgert. I've been on here a couple of times before. I'm a musician, writer, audio engineer, producer guy, and but my I think my real thing is I am a husband and father.
Very nice. And the reason we're having you on today is, I mean, you know, in the past you've been on to talk about your record, your Paul is Dead record, and all of your music that you're creating, and I'm sure there's some of that we can talk about as well, but it's more sort of the engineer, the technical side of things that is, I guess, like the new news right now for having you on the show. So you are a musician, you have made your own records, but you're also involved in helping some other interesting local people out with their music. So I think maybe the best place to start with that is if we just start talking about that Dud record. Which is, you know, maybe if you want to just give a quick summary of what that actually is.
Okay, so last October, I was playing at the Unscripted Moments Propaganda book launch that you hosted.
Yep.
With the legendary Mike Koop. I think he deserves that legendary.
I think so, yeah.
And we were just chatting, and since it was propaganda based, he mentioned, hey, I was in a band with John Sampson Fellows after he left propaganda, but before he started the Weaker Thins. At which point, you and myself and Greg were all like, wait, what? Like, that, like, blew our minds.
How had we not heard of this before?
Yeah, like, apparently they only played like two or three shows. And then he also mentioned that they recorded, but it never got mixed, never got released or anything. And he still had the master tapes. So immediately my, you know, engineer brain goes, well, what format are they? And he's just like, I have just a couple of ADATs, Alesis digital audio tape, which is a very dead format right now. And I told him, you know what? If you can get those to me, I'm sure I can find somebody in the city with a machine. I can get them transferred. I will happily mix those for you just so you can have them, because that's a really cool thing to have.
Like, definitely.
You want to have, like, it's a piece of Winnipeg music history, not only with Mike Koop, but also with John Sampson Fellows. And on drums is James Ash from I Spy. So it's just like a real super group, which is a term I hate, but like of three people who've been in some of the most legendary Winnipeg punk bands ever.
And it's a very apt term, I think, in this case. I mean, for people who are in our age group and a little bit older, who grew up with listening to these bands and the bands that kind of were offshoots of them, this is like a big deal, right?
Like I Spy, Bonaducci's, Propagandy, Weaker Thins, four of the biggest, most important bands, the 90s at the very least, but if not all of Winnipeg punk have ever produced.
For like, sure. And I remember at that show, I mean, you know, as you said, I was hosting it, the interview part with Greg from Unscripted Moments. And I remember hearing about this. I'm not sure if I was in the conversation with you and Coop or I was adjacent to it, but I remember hearing about this thing. Oh, that's amazing. I wonder if I'll ever hear it, because again, it's on a dead format. I certainly don't have the technology to hear that. I wouldn't have the first clue of how to even start, but then you obviously took it to that sort of next level of wanting to actually make this something you could fiddle around with.
Yeah, because I wanted to hear it. Like, more than anything, I wanted a bunch of more Mike Koop songs that have those other two guys on them. Like, of course I want to hear this. So we all, like, after we did soundcheck and load-in, we all, like, went back home and got showered and dressed and came back. And when I came back, Mike had gone home and gotten the tapes.
Nice.
And I have them right here for the people on video.
Cool.
They're two SVHS tapes because it's on a, like I said, it's on a format called ADAT that records digital audio on SVHS. And again, dead format. So I started calling around to find people who have one of these machines still. And I got a hold of Lloyd Peterson at Paintbox Recordings. He still had one. Went in there, got them all transferred to Pro Tools, and brought them home. And just a note on Lloyd, the engineer on the first, I think the first two Weaker Than's records, the first, what else? I think on the last Bonaducci's album and the first Greg McPherson record. So like another big player in the city.
Well, he shows up a lot. I mean, I obsessively document my collection of local music on Discogs, and his name comes up so often. He's one of those people that is on, like, you know, probably hundreds of records that I have by local artists of like a pretty wide range of genres too.
Yeah. Also, these were originally recorded by John Sutton, which is also of the Weaker Than's fame as well. Also, he did a ton of local stuff around this time using his pair of ADAT machines. So I got them mixed up, sent them to Mike, and Mike was like, wow, awesome. What do we want to do with these? And I was like, hey, I think we should release them. They're really good songs. As long as we can get James and John on board, let's do it and let's make it a fundraiser for Palestine, for the Palestine. I'm always blank on the name of it, but it's for Palestine relief, which I mean, obviously is very important, especially right now. And by right now, I mean the last 40 years, but, so we ended up putting it out on Bandcamp. Everybody signed off on it. We got wonderful artwork done by Matt Milkowski. Matt Milkowski out of Chicago. And it's available now on Bandcamp, which is dudband1996.bandcamp.com. And it's been out for a while. But the really cool thing now is what we're doing next. And that is, by the time this is out, this should be live on the internet, but we are doing a physical release on 12-inch vinyl. It's going to be a one-sided LP with an etching of the cover art on the B-side. Again, all proceeds going to Palestinian Relief. We're partnering with Bitter Melody Records out of, I believe, North Carolina, maybe?
Okay.
Or somewhere in the States. They're handling all the U.S. Orders, and the Canadian ones I'm distributing on my label, One Friday Music, which is also who did the digital release of the Dead thing and does all my stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're only so far, depending on how the pre-orders go, we're making 150 of these. 75 are coming to Canada, 75 are staying in the States. So if you want one, you got to pre-order. If you're in Winnipeg or Winnipeg adjacent, I'll give free local delivery. I will drive it to you, or you can come pick it up at the Uniter office, the U of W, whatever you're more comfortable with.
Cool.
But not going to be a ton of these, so you might want to get them now while you can. I could use you. Misunderstand.
I do want to get into sort of the process of how you restored these songs, but before that, I mean, there's obviously going to be demand for this. I don't know how your downloads have been digitally. You don't have to. I'm not going to ask you to give me numbers or anything, but I imagine just based on the names of the people involved in this project, especially in Winnipeg, there's obviously people. There's demand for this, right? I mean, there's,
oh yeah,
and obviously, I mean, John specifically has reached well beyond Winnipeg with his projects. The other guys do too, but I think more than the others, he's sort of the known name outside of the city limits. So there's obviously an audience for it, for that reason as well. So what has the response been, sort of in terms of the digital version so far? I mean, where are you getting people buying this from or finding it from?
Well, it's a lot of Winnipeg people, obviously, but it's all over the world. People around Europe, South America, a lot of Americans, a lot of UK, which yeah. I guess is some people in Australia. Like, the whole world, whoever's hearing about this is interested. And we haven't, like, because it's a fundraiser, we didn't want to have to put up a bunch of money for this. Like, I did on my part for free. In fact, I paid to have them transferred to Pro Tools out of my own pocket instead of, like, taking it out and recouping it just because yeah. I want it. So we didn't do a ton of promo. It's mostly just been social media between posts by myself, which is the smallest of reaches, Propagandy Podcast, Mike and John Sampson and James Ash, just like the members of the band doing posts. And it's been more than we were expecting.
Cool.
Like, we've raised, before any Bandcamp and fees, we've raised at least $1,000.
Oh, right on. That's pretty good for something like this, yeah.
Pretty good for something that we're this very cheap. Like, I think it's $6 or $7 or something like that. Maybe $7. I don't remember the exact price. It's been a while since I looked at those numbers. But like, it's done way better than we ever could have imagined. And we're excited to have this physical product.
Yeah. Well, it's super exciting, especially because it was, you know, as recently as October, just this lost album, right? I mean, it was this thing that Coop mentioned out of the blue, and none of us even knew existed. And you've obviously been heavily involved in making this come to reality since then. As the person who sat down with these tapes and turned it into what it is now, I guess first of all, what does it sound like for people who haven't heard it? How do you describe sort of what the sound of this is? Because I think, especially listeners to this show, they know one or two, if not all, of the names involved and their bands, but this is a bit of a different thing, right?
I sort of describe it as it is a lost Lookout Records EP from 1994. Like, it's really catchy, really good melody pop punk. It sort of goes a little bit into a little bit more sort of like indie, almost a couple of them have a little almost country flavor, but like, it's just really solid Lookout Record stuff, like 15.
Yeah, yeah.
Or experience, but like with thoughtful lyrics about things other than, I mean, Mr. T Experience are known, it's every single song is about a girl,
yeah,
and all of this
often
is
by
about,
name, yeah, yeah,
yeah. And I love the Mr. T Experience,
I do too, yeah.
But a lot of this stuff is like, it's a little bit more heady, but heady in the way that a guy in his mid-20s would have written in 1996.
Sure.
Which I can relate to.
for sure, yeah. I mean, you know, we were both younger in our mid-20s then, but I mean, it's some of that stuff is a little bit universal, I think.
Oh yeah. So yeah, it's just really fun guitar, almost like bordering on power pop at times, like just really fun, catchy stuff. Like my kids, because they had to listen to it coming from the studio for so long, sometimes I'll catch one of my kids with one of the hooks in their head, which tells you how catchy it is.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I mean, like, because this is dated, because it has, like you said, that kind of mid-90s Liquid Records sort of vibe, did you have to do anything special when it came to restoring this to maintain that kind of feel? I mean, obviously the songs themselves are going to have the feel that they have, but in terms of the actual recordings, like, is there any danger when you're doing something like this, because I've never done this, of making it sound too, not, I don't know if clean is the right word, but too modern, too digitized, too sort of not organic almost, if that's the thing.
Yeah, well, there is a danger. This stuff is recorded digitally on ADAT, which is sort of the worst parts of digital mixed with the worst parts of analog format. But it was cheap, so people used it, and it was a huge important step in, like, DIY recording in general. The main thing that I wanted to do was I didn't want it to sound like a John Feldman modern pop punk record.
That's kind of what I was getting at. Yeah, you want to have that. Yeah,
that stuff. Like, there's one specific drum sound that he does and Travis Barker does that I cannot stand. So I made a point of staying away from that as much as I could. Like, it was very much using a lot of the plugins. Like, everything I'm doing is digital, but this should need to have an analog warmth. So a lot of, like, the plugins that I used were things that were emulating analog gear instead of, like, hyper precision digital stuff. Like, I'm not doing surgical EQ work. I'm trying to get more vibes. And also I wanted to make sure I didn't master it crazy loud and with no dynamics, because that's a real issue with, less so known during the streaming era, but it has been an issue in the last 25 years that records are just too loud and don't have dynamics. One thing that I was very proud of is when I sent them to get checked to make a vinyl master for, they came back and said, we didn't have to do anything to this. It's perfectly done for a vinyl. Like, we didn't need to take out any of the peaks. Like, it's, the levels are perfect, the cool. EQ is perfect, and I was really proud of that, because that's what I was going for. I wanted this to feel like a 7-inch that you bought at a skate shop in 1994.
That came with a bunch of flyers inside it that advertised every other record on the label.
Exactly.
And you went out and bought all of those, as you did.
100% you did. And I'll then read all of the bands that are thanked on the liner notes and bought all of those as well.
It's funny you mentioned Lookout too, because I had, at probably around that time, I had a giant poster on my wall that came with whatever Lookout release, and it had the entire catalog. And I used that. It was like a big cartoon drawing, but then all around it, the border of it was every single one of their records. And on the back, it listed the names and it had the ordering information. And I use that as like a guide to introduce me to so much shit. Like, over a decade or so of just like, I haven't heard this yet. It's on my poster. It's on Lookout.
Econochrist. That sounds interesting. I have to find an Econochrist record.
Exactly, right? And that was based mainly on having heard like the Mr. T Experience or Operation Ivy or Green Day, right? Any of these bands, right? And it's just like, well, if it sounds like this, I'm probably going to love it. And I feel like that was an era when, even locally, I have some local 7-inches from like Endearing and labels like that still have those in there. And it's the same thing. It's just smaller, but, you know, here's a list of other albums. And I think that this is totally that kind of vibe.
I think initially Endearing was going to be the one who put this out. Okay. And it was going to be a split with one side. They were going to edit down the dud tracks to like 3 or 4. And then the other side was going to be solo John Sampson stuff.
Oh, cool. Okay.
That was the initial plan, is my understanding. Again, I could be a little bit off on this. This is just what I figured from talking to Mike and John about it. That's my understanding. But instead, John started the Weaker Thens, which, I mean, worked out.
Worked out for a lot of people. Yeah.
And me, honestly, I adore the Weaker Thens. So it worked out for everyone.
Wasted about a third of my life. I've wasted so much time and daylight. Came out of nowhere. Now I'm still there with no one. Taking all of these lost hours and put them into things no one cares about. I waited 20 years, but my voice hasn't broken. the scene. No, I'm not somewhere in between. The guy who always wore a shirt and Mr. Clean. Now I've wasted a little bit of your time, but I've kept it very short and I've tried to be both honest, to keep your interest with humor. Doesn't do much good to complain, but sometimes I just have to exclaim, well, I feel really rotten, but thank you so much for asking. Artistic license. Aren't those only handed out by multinational corporations? And I'm definitely not part of the scene. No, I'm lodged somewhere in between. That guy who always wore a shirt and Mr. Clean.
And then, you know, I don't want to get too much into the, because you are sort of the technical side of things, not the creative side. There is creativity in what you do, obviously, but this is their project and you're just sort of helping it come to fruition. But in terms of the actual songwriting on there, I mean, does it feel like, considering who's in the band, that it's sort of a transitional point between some of those other projects they were in and, for example, something like The Weaker Thans?
Yeah, definitely. John's playing bass and you can tell that he's done his time in Propaganda.
Sure.
His bass playing really adds a lot. And so do his background vocals. And even when I sent a set of mixes to everybody, John came back with a note. He said, pull the bass out here. Just like, because then the build will mean more when it comes back in afterwards. Like his sort of songwriting development, even today, coming back and listening to it, just keeps growing and growing. And you can tell that he's thinking about all of these, like, they're not his songs, but he's thinking about them like a songwriter when he comes up with harmonies and bass parts, and it's just lovely. And then James is like, I mean, I Spy were a powerful band, and James is a powerful drummer, so it's really fun to have like really big, hard-hitting drum performances on what are otherwise like pop songs.
Sure.
It's a really fun blend of getting all of like the I Spy vibe from on the drums, and then John's bass playing and songwriting in the bass. And then Mike, who's been making great music now for, what, 40 years? Like, a very long time?
Yeah, and probably will be doing so for the next 40 years as well. Yeah, and exactly. It wouldn't surprise anyone yet.
And we're all here for it, too.
Totally, totally.
You know, we're working on another song right now that I don't know if he's planning to release, but just for a fun thing. And it's like, oh, this little throwaway thing that I'm working on him with is a fantastic song, incredibly well written. Like, it's that one I can't go into detail on.
Sure,
yet,
but maybe that's a good segue into sort of this has opened up some doors for you as far as now you're trying to do more of this. I mean, this was sort of like a one-off thing that you happened to be, I guess, passionate enough about to track down the equipment, but now, you know, there's the possibility of many, many other projects that are no longer available anywhere, but you now have the technology to hopefully revive some of them.
Yeah. I'm not sure. In fact, I'm getting together with Doug McLean from Bonaducci sometime later this week to sort of figure out a scope. But obviously, Mike showed the songs to the guys in the Bonaducci's, who were all like blown away by it. And their first thought was, we still have our ADATs from Matching Socks, Missing Feet. And that record, and I will agree with them, sounds terrible. You can't hear the bass anywhere on it. So instead of continuing to go back to Lloyd, I went on eBay and I bought an ADAT machine for like $50.
Right on.
But it was broken. Luckily, based from internet searching and my own sort of like experience, I managed to repair an ADAT machine. And it involved using brake fluid, which was weird.
That's bizarre, yeah.
It's very, there was one wheel on it where the rubber had dried out and it needed to be able to grab something. and brake fluid will temporarily restore the tackiness in rubber.
Oh, interesting. I wouldn't have thought, but that's.
But not any brake fluid. It has to be dot three.
Okay.
If you use dot four, what are you, an idiot? But no, it seems ridiculous, but it worked. And then I've since ordered a new part, which cost as much as the entire ADAT, but that's okay.
But that was only $50, so you're probably not that exactly. deep in the hole with this project in the first place. So, I mean, I didn't realize ADAT tapes looked like VHS tapes. I mean, I'd heard of DAT before, and I'd heard seen ADAT in credits on albums, especially from that era. But I didn't know what it was. And so, like, how many people actually use this thing that are potentially out there? Like, it was fairly short-lived, but widely used, right?
It was, yeah, well, an ADAT machine is an 8-track digital recorder that cost like $3,000 or $4,000. Whereas if you're buying an analog tape machine, anything that's worth using, you're looking into 5 to 10 to 15 to 100,
sure.
depending on what you're going for. And the nice thing about these is you get one of them, you get 8 tracks. You buy a second one and a cheap little cable, you can daisy chain them, and now you have 16 tracks that automatically sync. And you can do as many of those. There's some limit, but it's like a crazy limit where you can have like 64 tracks or something, which nobody, if you're spending money to buy enough ADATs for 64 tracks, just buy a tape machine.
Right. But if you're a basement punk band in Winnipeg in 1996, that opens up a lot of doors that maybe you couldn't necessarily get with like a 4-track tape recorder.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I know that Sutton used it a lot. In fact, I have some Bonaducci's tapes from the Matching Socks record that Sutton did.
Cool.
And also, Jared from Volition, when he was recording, did it. My band Carpe Diem recorded with him, and that was on ADAT. And in fact, I'm talking to Ian from Carpe Diem about getting those because, like, I have a tape. Why don't we digitize everything?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's sort of my whole... ethos on local music is record and preserve and make everything. It doesn't matter how good or bad it is, if it exists and it's an artifact of like the local music scene,
I'll even call out to any of you local musicians from that era who are listening to this, reach out to me. I'm at One Friday Music on Instagram. If you have old ADATs that you want preserved, let me know. This sort of made me realize that this would be a really fun focus for my engineering career.
Totally.
Is to, like, both the preservation, but then also the reissue stuff. Like, the fact that the DAT record is out on my label is amazing to me. Even though it's costing me money and I'm going to make nothing, but it's for a good cause and it's great music, it's so neat to have a Mike Koop, James Ash, John Sampson Fellows record with my little logo on the back. Like, that's
definitely, yeah. I mean, these are guys that you grew up listening to.
Exactly. All three of them in different projects.
Yeah.
So if there's anybody out there who's listening who has old ADATs and they're interested in getting them digitized or mixed, hit me up. My rates are going to be cheap because I'm very passionate about this. And there's one other thing that I forgot to mention Doug gave me is the final bounced mixed down masters of their cassette.
Oh, cool.
On a DAT, not an ADAT, a DAT, which I don't have a DAT machine, but John Paul Peters was kind enough to lend me his.
Oh, right on. Okay.
So I transferred those final mix downs, and using some fancy software, I demixed them.
But he's still free to use them to your advantage. They need a peace of mind, and all they leave behind are fused bits of knowledge. Well, I'm prone to giving in too easily for no reason. I will listen a little more.
Bonducci's is a great example, I think, where there are a lot of people who have their music still in Winnipeg, but in most cases, it's just the Democracy of Sleep, because that one was on CD. I mean, it wasn't the only one, but it was on CD. It was widely available. I have like three copies of it myself. Like it's out there.
Best sounding one too. So
it's an amazing album, but they have so much other stuff that came out on tape or came out on a 7-inch or came out in small, very small releases, is way out of print. And the fact that you're able to do this with some of their stuff potentially for the future is amazing, because, I mean, great band, obviously everyone would benefit from hearing them. But even someone like me who hoards local music and is, you know, pretty heavily collecting all this stuff, I don't have a lot of their releases myself.
Yeah, there are tons of them. Splits with a billion people. They were on a compilation where they cover a song, like an 80s covers compilation, which I have the masters for.
Oh, cool.
I have the multi-tracks for the Everything's Rachel 7-inch, which is, if you don't have that 7-inch, you don't have those songs.
That's right, and I don't. And I've always wanted to hear it because...
Can I let you in?
Yeah.
It's really good.
I'm sure it is. I have no doubt that it is, yeah.
I mean, who knows what's going to come of all of this stuff? It's just, it's a neat thing that we're working on. And we're going to see what we can do, if there's anything that's worth doing, if anything that's cost effective, because I love doing this, but I have a mortgage too. So we got to figure out what makes sense.
And you have
that.
A job and you have kids and you have other things. That this is not your full-time gig, but I mean, it would be cool if it could become one.
Oh my goodness. If this could become my full-time gig, if my full-time gig was restoring old local music, mixing and releasing it, that is the ultimate dream.
I would just probably hang out at your house all day.
Yeah, why wouldn't you? I would finally have the archive that could rival yours.
Yeah. It'd be better too, because it would be stuff that no one else has.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, okay. So, I mean, I will link to your label in the show notes so people can find it there, and to the Dud record on Bandcamp. But you, I feel like, you know, I have you here. You might as well talk about your own stuff. I think last time you were on the show, you had released a couple of singles after your album came out that were very emotional subject matter. What is the current status of your solo project? Do you have new music coming out? Are you working on stuff?
I'm working on stuff. I'm working on a new record. I'm expecting it to be out in a year, at least. But I got a handful of songs going. I got so much other stuff going on with music right now that it's got to take a bit of a backseat. But I'm hoping in about a year I'll have a new record out. Maybe I'll throw in a single before then. I had a weird idea for a Bandcamp only release that I might do that would be very unexpected for me, but we'll see
if
that's happening. But yeah, it's going. If anybody wants to book me for a show, feel free.
And right now you have Paul Is Dead, which is it's available in some physical formats too. You have those singles, and you have a Christmas EP as well, right?
Yeah, I have a Christmas EP and a Christmas single. The Christmas EP is quite old, and it's very deliberately lo-fi. It's called Christmas Can Be Hard. It's just sad Christmas songs.
There are a lot of those.
Yeah, and those are the best ones.
They really are, yeah.
Yeah, and then last Christmas, I did a cover of The Kinks' Father Christmas with Mike Coop.
That's right.
Because Mike Coop is still the best. And then the most recent single was Flair versus Steamboat, Clash of the Champions 6, which I'd been working on when I heard that my old childhood friend Brendan Berg had passed. So that song sort of, it's... And also around that time, another one of our mutual childhood friends, Barry Arkley, also passed. So that sort of morphed into being a bit more of a heavy song, even though it's still poppy and light sounding.
Yeah, and we talked about those kind of at length the last time we were on the show, too. Exactly. So I would encourage people to check that out, because, I mean, it was, all of that was fairly fresh.
I went back and listened to it. I was a wreck.
Well, I feel like those songs, too, sort of came out of the immediate emotional response to what you went through, losing two friends, and I think that you can hear it. But again, it's, like you said, it's still very kind of light and upbeat sonically, but there's that undercurrent of sad, which obviously is going to happen.
Mountain Goat vibe. The Mountain Goats thing. That's what the Mountain Goats do. Nobody does sad songs that are upbeat like the Mountain Goats.
Yeah, no. The only other example I can think of that really does it repeatedly like that is the Slackers, where they're playing ska songs, but it's the most depressing shit ever, and it's amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Find me a sad ska song that sounds sad. There's not a ton.
Not a ton of them, no.
Not a ton of them, no.
It's probably not very good if it...
Or it defeats the purpose.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so do you want to just plug your various band camps and things before I let you go here?
Yeah. Sure. Paul Hodgert, bandcamp.com. You can also at Paul Hodgert on Instagram, at One Friday Music on Instagram. And then it should be up by the time this comes out. The dud physical of vinyl release. It was Dud Band 1996. bandcamp.com. $35 within Canada. I'm trying my best to keep shipping cheap, but it's a tough one.
Is what it
local
is. Yeah.
Free.
And that will be linked to. That'll be linked to in the show notes. So if you forget what Paul just said for the numbers and the letters and all that in the Bandcamp thing, just click click and buy it because it's a really cool record. Hard.
It was hard to get a dud based Bandcamp handle, but I figured nothing is funnier to me than Dud Band 1996 because that's the kind of stupid names people would have for online stuff in the late 90s, early 2000s.
There are still people who have stupid names like that for, but yes, I know what you mean for sure.